Hello everyone, we're Superhero Stuff You Should Know, and if you think you know about superheroes and comic books, think again.
We got romance, we got action,
romance.
We got comedy, we got everything you need, man. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know for all your superhero needs.
I don't know about this romance, what part are you talking about?
We've got all kinds of sketches, and then deep dives on top of that. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
Alright, so come on down to, wait, why did I say come on down? To Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
At Maximum Mediocrity, people say things like,
I don't dress like this on the regular basis. This isn't my, you know, pooping uniform. This is not
And they also say things like,
The nurses are usually either angels of mercy or whores.
Every episode is a new experience where you get to know people that aren't famous but should be.
Why am I facing Floyd Mayweather in the woods?
My co-host Morgan and I track down the people you didn't know you needed to hear from.
It's like hot sex in a mug.
We are the Maximum Mediocrity Podcast, and we are on all major podcasting platforms. We'll be waiting for you.
Oh, I couldn't live a single day without you.
All right, Matt, we are nearing the end of Polka Party, and before we dive into this track, we do have to give a huge shout-out. Brand new podcast. We have not even completed a full year of a podcast, but we did fantastic on our Spotify Wrapped for a show that literally started in April. According to our Wrapped, we were in the top 30% of the most shared podcasts globally. We're one of the top 20% most followed podcasts. We're listened to in over 13 countries. And somehow with us not even being around for a full year, 22 people had us as their number one podcast of the year. So whoever you people are, big thank you. Also, thank you to the 88 people that had us in their top 10.
Yeah.
And the 59 that had us in our top 5. I'm looking forward to see where those numbers go when we actually complete a full year of being
Exactly, yeah. That's
fantastic. But, congratulations, guys.
Thank you. It's wonderful to see, and you know, this has just been so fun for us, and I'm glad it's fun for people who are listening as well. And you know, we love you. Thank you for listening to our show.
Yeah. And Matt, who is this voice that I'm hearing in my ear?
Oh yes. This is our friend Sean, aka Cowboy Coder.
Yeah.
Who is joining us to talk about Good Enough for Now.
Yeah.
Your pick. So I guess that welcome. Thank you for joining us. We really
absolutely
appreciate it. And to start, I'm going to take Matt's job for a moment because usually he does this, but
okay.
I'm ready.
All right.
What made you pick this song? What was the thing that that drew you to Good Enough for Now?
Yeah. Thanks for having me on and everything. I've always loved Weird Al. He's just been a part of my childhood, and that whole genre is just really cool to me because I love how he just goes with whatever he's feeling. But Good mm-hmm. Enough for Now kind of calls to my countryside.
I was going to say Cowboy Coder.
Yeah,
is in your
Cowboy
name.
Coder.
That this is,
yeah, exactly.
This is right up your
right,
right
in
your
my
wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely. And it reminds me of an old George Jones song, I Always Get Lucky With You. I don't know if you've ever heard
that
song.
Yeah, I know that one. I know that one,
but
yeah.
Yeah. So I thought it was kind of like a kind of tip of the hat to old George Jones. And it's really like a comical kind of song if you listen to it, but it's got that old country twang to it. And it also kind of like resonates with me because when you get into coding as well, it's like good enough for now is always like, you know, kind of the mantra of the day when you start out, you know. So
that's a recurring phrase in the coding
yeah,
community.
Absolutely.
It's also one of those things where something that jumped out at me with this song. First of all, just a fun fact, this was the last original song recorded for Polka Party. We've been talking a lot with the Weird Al originals that some of the best ones could be passable as an actual song by an artist.
Totally.
Right? Like, Dare to be Stupid could 100% be a Devo song. You wouldn't have to change any of the lyrics.
Yeah.
Like, This Is the Life could absolutely pass as just a song from, like, a Broadway musical without any lyrical changes. This song, if you had sent me this song and said, hey, this is like a deep cut David Allan Coe song, I'd be like, absolutely.
Right.
For sure.
Like, you could totally see it fitting, right?
Yeah, like it fits that like I think people aren't aware that there are some really funny country
musicians. Exactly what I was going to say is that the comedy in this song is absolutely represented, especially in this era of country music that he's referencing.
Right.
There's so much comedy in the lyrics to those songs. Yeah, so this is a funny song, and it does feel like Al because of the nature of the lyrics. And this is a, you know, in this song, Al is representing a character who we kind of see before, which is sort of like the, I don't know, I guess it's somewhat like the aloof, oblivious guy who doesn't understand how dumb he's being.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it completely works. You put this song in someone else's voice.
Yeah.
It's instantly a totally believable country song.
This could be David Allan Coe. This could be Ray Stevens.
Mm-hmm. Right.
More modern. It could be Roger Allen Wade. Like,
yeah.
There is this like classic 60s, 70s country comedy.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That it's hard to place, like, but it's this sense of humor. Like, it's not, like, very rarely. I mean, Roger Allen Wade is a little bit more aggressive, but like David Allan Coe and Ray Stevens, for the most part, it was this type of comedy where it's just like, it's not mean-spirited as much as it's apathetic.
Right.
Like, it's like taking a song and doing it apathetically.
Yeah, it's that country wittiness, right? Like, you're listening to it and you're like kind of vibing along with it, and then you're like, oh wait, you know, like you start to realize like, oh yeah, like they're kind of presenting a caricature of, like you're saying, like some goofy guy at the end of the bar who's like doesn't understand why this girl's even in his life, but somehow he's like, hey, yeah, this works, and he's just kind of bumbling through life.
Exactly.
And the chorus is so it's such an earwormy, catchy chorus too. Like, if I had any notes for this song, I think this note would work better if he had done this song in the late 90s, but I would have had that chorus repeat a couple times and almost go like a Garth Brooks Friends in Low Places style with it, where you get more and more of a chorus of people singing in the background as it repeats over and over again, because it is that like sing-songy, catchy chorus.
It is actually almost unfairly short.
Right.
Yes.
Like this is the sort of thing, I agree with you, and I thought it is funny because often in country songs like this, it is like verse after verse after verse of getting the point home, and this is pretty concise.
Yeah.
We get like a double verse at the front, and then one more in the middle, and it's two choruses, and it's over. There's a solo in the middle, a fiddle slash lap steel solo going on. It's
3 minutes
short.
But it's 3 minutes that moves.
Oh no, it's it feels like it's over in a second. And again, what we were saying, like the lyrics, you know, and his just tone of voice are the thing that make this different, but the melody, the instrumentation, you know, I looked it up, I'm assuming it must be Jim West who's playing the pedal steel or the lap steel. I don't know, they don't even specify, there's no one credited for it, he's just credited with guitars, so I'm assuming he played it, but perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, the musicianship and the instrumentation and the arrangement of this, as per usual for Al, is flawless representation of the genre that he's shooting for.
Yeah, and that's what always fascinated me about Weird Al, how he could jump from genre to genre and just nail it every time.
Yeah.
Whether it was a parody or an original, it's like, it's just like you're saying, like, this is something like out of that era of country music that you could put onto a George Jones or any other kind of like artist of that time.
Absolutely.
And you would think it was just another song that they wrote. And that's a credit to his musicianship, you know, like.
So. Yeah. No. Yeah. We've talked before on this show about, and it's just, I love seeing these examples as we go, and I'm just going to keep talking about it because it tickles me so much that I think something that has worked so well for Al over the years is the nature of what he does allows him to explore musically anything and everything in a way that always makes him sound fresh.
Absolutely.
Like he has moments that occasionally will feel stale, but he can always pull something and he can be like, oh, now I'm going to do this sort of thing. Now I'm going to do that. And then even, you know, however many albums deep in his career, you hear something and you're like, whoa, I've never heard him do anything like that before. And it must keep it so interesting for him and his band that they can push themselves into kind of uncharted territory anytime they want.
Yeah.
It almost makes you jealous, right?
Right?
Like, I think of just as even just like a local dude who occasionally would like jokingly throw together a cover band. I never felt like it was possible to do all of the different songs that were inside my head that I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Because like I have such a wide scape of of music. Like, again, we're just because literally recording this the day after the Spotify Wrapped stuff has dropped, but like my Spotify Wrapped said that I listened to over 138 genres this past year. Like, now obviously Spotify makes up some wild genres. Like my second most listened to genre was Hollywood, which I don't know what that means.
Hollywood.
But, yeah, I guess it's because I listen to a lot of musicals,
I don't know.
But my point being, like, when I would form these cover bands, we would have to just land on like, okay, we're going to do songs from the 90s. Because in my head, I'd be like, I want to do like a song by Lit, and I want to do a Green Day song, but I want to try to do a Primus song. And it's like, if I was in an actual band writing originals, there's no way that I could do all of the different things that I like.
Oh, yeah.
But Al has like cracked this code where it's like, he can completely change genre song by song, and like, no one blinks an eye. God forbid, Green Day throws an acoustic guitar on one of their songs, and everyone's just like, these fucking sellouts.
I've always thought that bands like, and Al, it's funny because Al does never gets talked about in the same breath, but bands we've mentioned before on this show who have a reputation for being artists who pick and choose from different genres all the time, bands like They Might Be Giants or like Ween, and that's what fans love about them. And Al has done the same thing. He doesn't get considered the same way because of the parody nature of what he does, and so people don't treat it the same. But from a musical perspective, it's this brilliant way of like, you'll never, if everything's a possibility, how could you ever get bored?
Yeah.
Making, like, you know, and you're never also never going to be pigeonholed. You're never going to be told, like, it's never going to be like, oh man, he used to be in a rock band and then they did this crazy electro record and sold out. Like, all that talk is off the table when from the jump you're like, no, nothing is off limits for us. We can do it all, and we will do it all.
Yeah, Al is the only person I think no fan would ever be like, oh, that's sellout. Yeah. Like,
that's
Yeah.
You know what? I'm actually saying that, but I feel like there's one album of his that I always refer to as his sellout album.
Ooh, can't wait to get to it.
So we'll get to it. And even then, I say it jokingly, but they're one of his albums in the 90s. So many of the songs feel like a tie-in to something else that I always look at that album as like, Was this a passion project, or was this like, hey, a bunch of different places offered me money to write songs for things?
Sure.
And I just like threw them together onto a record. Like,
yeah.
But we'll get there.
Oh, we'll get there. We'll get there.
but good enough for now. I mean, the lyrics, it's so funny because it's such like a flip flop every single time.
Yeah.
It's like a little bit of praise. And even the most praise, it's like, I'm relatively lucky. I guess you're pretty good. I honestly can say you're an above average lady, almost what I've been looking for. But then you get to the chorus and it's, you're sort of everything I've ever wanted. You're not perfect, but I love you anyhow. You're the woman that I've always dreamed of. Well, not really, but you're good enough for now.
On the first Vanity tour, I saw Al do this song.
I was going to ask if he's played this
live.
Yeah,
he played it. Yeah. And before he played it, he said the number of times that he has been told that this was someone's like first dance at their wedding song
made
him very uncomfortable. He's like, I hear it so often, and every time I think, oh my God, why?
Yeah.
Why would you do this?
Why would you do that?
Yeah. But yeah, no, I can appreciate it. It's a funny thing because it's a joking, like, it's also a sweet sentiment in its own way, right? Like, it is very, like, it's obviously funny, and it's obviously like being kind of like, it's tongue in cheek, but I can appreciate the sentiment of the, you know, at the end of the day, everyone finds someone who's good enough. Like, if you know, there's that always that sense of like, if you're waiting for the single perfect ultimate, you know, that doesn't always, that person may or may not exist. You find someone who's good enough for now.
Yeah. And that's where
I don't know. Maybe I'm totally wrong.
Well, it's fascinating too, because I look at this song too. And when I look through the lyrics, I'm like, this could actually be like a love song about a piece of code you wrote. You know, that's,
yeah,
like,
there you go.
You know,
exactly.
Hey, this code is like the most amazing thing, but it works for now, and we'll evolve it over time. And
yeah,
you know what I mean? So it's like, it's,
yeah,
cool,
totally,
that you can put other metaphors kind of on
you
top
can put other metaphors in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a really versatile song in that way.
This is like one of those songs where we're not quite at the ranking stage yet, but it's one of those ones where I'm like, I honestly don't know where I'm going to rank this, because I feel like it's going to go somewhere that feels ultimately too low. And I'm like looking at my list and I'm realizing that with the parodies, I feel like it's a lot easier for us to definitively be like, this is a parody that we do not like. Like, this is a parody that we think is objectively bad.
Or just didn't work for various reasons. Like, the song didn't work for various reasons. Was a flop and some, like, things, some things just landed better than others culturally and, like, in terms of their overall significance. But the originals are harder to gauge because, yeah, how do you...
Originals are harder. So
how are we supposed to compare this to Slime Creatures from Outer Space?
Exactly. I was going to say something like... Towards the very bottom of both of our lists is Such a Groovy Guy, which is still a song that I would say is a good song.
Yeah.
Like, we've had this problem before where it's like we're gonna have like when we're in the game of ranking songs, Al songs are way more good than bad. So yeah, some good ones
despite
are gonna be
with
low.
The critical
just no
reviews.
Way it.
The critical reviews are always like. That's the thing that blows my mind in the 80s. The critics would be like, well, the parodies are good, but ugh, who cares about these originals?
Right. I went back and
it's
I
like
was,
retrospectively us.
I was reading more reviews of Polka Party. I know we talked about this at the top, but it is incredible. The amount of hate for this record when it came out was so intense.
Yeah.
People hated this. And truly, like, all the reviews are like, can we finally be done with this guy?
Yeah,
it has happened. The moment has passed. We all enjoyed Eat It, but it is not going to go any further than this, and we got to move on. And even this song, I read a review today that said that this was a half-baked attempt at a country parody, which I do not agree with at all. He really was taking a beating at this point in his career.
I'm curious when we get to the point because I can also understand. The hate, like I don't agree with it, but I can understand, like, 1986, this kid comes out of nowhere 3 years ago, has just been dropping an album a year for the last like 4 years, and like I'm trying to think of something comparatively, like, you know how like we as a culture just all will sometimes gang up on like one particular thing and be like, this is bad,
yeah,
and like no one's allowed to like voice the opposite.
Yeah.
I could see like culturally after 4 years in a row of Al, like people just being like, okay, enough. Like we've had it. I'm wondering when the point was where that whole pendulum swung. A weird comparison, but I feel like Bo Burnham is a great example of this, where like when Bo Burnham first came out, I feel like a lot of people, myself included, were like, who the fuck is this teenager in his bedroom shooting these obnoxious YouTube videos?
Yeah.
But like now the pendulum has shifted to the point where it's like anything he does, we're like, what a groundbreaking artist who is blending comedy with like deep social commentary.
Yeah.
But then you look back on those YouTube videos and he was doing that back when he was 16 years old. But it was like this obnoxious young package that made it hard to swallow. I'm wondering when the point was when, like, everybody who was writing him off as this obnoxious, like, 20-year-old kid suddenly was like, no, this might be one of the most artistically brilliant comedians of our entire lifetime.
I really do think, because it's funny, like, again, we're, you know, the different ages of people who discover Al and who have their experiences with him. Like, when I... Bad Hair Day was basically my first Al record as a kid when that came out. And even then, I remember, like, I was a kid, so I didn't really care, but, like, you know, he wasn't like taken super seriously. He was kind of a goofy character. I don't know exactly when, because there's not a moment in time, but it really felt to me like, and now we're going way, way ahead, but it felt to me like when he did the music videos for Mandatory Fun and he had all those comedians and everyone for Tacky and Foil and all those songs. Like, I remember thinking then, like, wow, this is like a generation of comedians who grew up loving Al. And now it's just unanimous. Like, he for critics at the time he was putting out records, they were like, ah, it's this goofy guy, I guess it's funny sometimes, but, you know, it was very easy to dismiss him in that sense. And then after enough time passes doing this, you have so many people who grew up with it who now are in positions of power and influence that it's like now it's just undeniable.
Yeah, I guess it's comparatively to like that first cast of Saturday Night Live. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, a bunch of, like, young, obnoxious kids who, all things considered, like, I talk about this book constantly because I love it, but the book Wild and Crazy Guy is how the 70s comedy scene changed comedy forever. Like, what National Lampoon and SNL was doing was so different than everything that comedy had been before it, except for maybe Airplane. Like, it was just this, like, groundbreaking thing that every critic hated. They hated every one of those movies. It didn't matter if it was the financially successful Animal House or, like, the kind of box office disappointment that was Caddyshack. Like, they just could not wait for this thing to stop being popular and it to be forgotten. And now it's like you look back and retrospectively there, those films are all looked at as like this golden age of like a tonal shift in comedy. And that's obviously, like you said, it's the people who grew up watching it who kept that love for it. That like are the people who are able to completely change the way it's talked about. So I think that makes sense. It's the people like us who grew up idolizing this guy.
Yeah. Despite what the critics thought, because kids or people who are into it don't care. You know, it's funny. I was just talking about this with someone else. Like, you know, it all seems different in hindsight. Like, you look back on these things and it doesn't seem possible. But now, like, go read reviews from when the first Led Zeppelin record came out or the first Black Sabbath. Nobody liked it. Nobody, because it had no context. It was a completely new experience. Like, nobody had made a record like that before, and it was just people didn't know what to make of it. And now I'm comparing Al to Led Zeppelin, which I'm more than happy to do.
Which it's why I love Chris and I make fun of this a lot on One Hit Thunder. But like when magazines like Rolling Stone and Pitchfork will just like change what their review was on an album when it becomes more culturally significant. And it's like, no, Rolling Stone, you gave Nevermind a 3-star review and you've got to just stick with that.
Stick with it. That's what I think makes Polka Party kind of, maybe that is that point for Weird Al. It's like, it's this moment where he's like you're saying, he was just like kind of bambasted for this whole album, but he persevered. And he kept doing his thing, and he knew there was an audience there that appreciated what he did, and
he followed it up with his best-selling record for like a decade. Like even worse was like I don't think I actually appreciated how big that album actually was until we started doing this podcast, and I looked at the numbers and was like, oh my God, that album blew everything else out of the water after people had already started to throw the dirt on the coffin for his career.
And so perseverance can't be underestimated, right?
Like, it absolutely cannot be. And you're right. He knew. He believed in himself and what he was doing enough to know that he had more to do and say. And thank God he did.
Yeah.
And I do think that this record overall, I can appreciate why, like we said, we've talked before, like some of the parody choices are just songs that have not stood the test of time. So it doesn't feel as vital as some of his other ones where he really nailed the parody choices. And now they all still feel so huge. So I get why. But I do think that overall, I think this record is probably underrated.
I feel bad because I'm going to also agree with you and say it's underrated while simultaneously knowing that next week I will probably put it at the bottom of my Weird Al albums list.
For now.
Because I do think that there's worse that came out after.
This is not a, like, it's, I can appreciate that for him career-wise, it was something of a low point, at least at that moment. And again, I said in a previous episode, Al also on stage at one of those shows said to the audience that this was his worst album. Full stop. Yeah.
And I don't agree with that.
I don't think I agree
with that
either.
I can think of at least three albums worse than this.
But I can appreciate that from Al's perspective, this might have been a very painful. He's still young. And there was probably some part of him when this came out and flopped that he was like, oh God, am I really done? Is this over?
Eventually, we will be watching the Behind the Music special on this. And I do, if I recall correctly, he does talk about like, when this came out and it made no
impact,
no ripple whatsoever, like he really did think like, all right, maybe it's over. It was this and UHF were like his two biggest career low points because it was like he thought he had finally overcome
something. Yeah, some big something. Hurdle and it didn't.
Hello, everyone. We're Superhero Stuff You Should Know. And if you think you know about superheroes and comic books, think again.
We got romance. We got action.
Romance.
We got comedy. We got everything you need, man. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know for all your superhero needs.
I don't know about this romance. What part are you talking about?
We've got all kinds of sketches and then deep dives on top of that. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
All right. So come on down to... Wait, why did I say come on down? To Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
At Maximum Mediocrity, people say things like,
I don't dress like this on the regular basis. This isn't my, you know, pooping uniform. This is not
And they also say things like,
The nurses are usually either angels of mercy or whores.
Every episode is a new experience where you get to know people that aren't famous but should be.
Why am I facing Floyd Mayweather in the woods?
My co-host Morgan and I track down the people you didn't know you needed to hear from.
It's like hot sex in a mug.
We are the Maximum Mediocrity Podcast, and we are on all major podcasting platforms. We'll be waiting for you.
Hi, friends. The world got you down? Don't be sad. Listen to $2 Late Fee with Zach and Dustin.
$2 Late Fee is the podcast that celebrates the best decade of entertainment, the 1980s. We pick a movie and soundtrack from our youth that we loved and see if it holds up today. We also interview your favorite celebrities from that era.
All in the spirit of positivity and togetherness. Check us out at $2LateFee.com.
I love this project, man. This is such a great idea.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to see how you guys finalize everything.
I got to give a little bit of a shout out to someone who I'm sure will be a future guest. My friend Robert Bacon does a bunch of different podcasts, but the first podcast I ever found of his was Adam Sandler Please Stop, where he did this structure. They watched every single Adam Sandler release in order and just slowly ranked them as a duo to determine what is like his best to worst movie. And I was like, I love that format.
I love that idea.
It's great because it brings like a lot of fresh energy back to things like this, right? Like Good Enough For Now, I'm sure like a lot of people are like,
oh, this is a song I would never put on.
Like, right, yeah, exactly. And so,
but now I might. Like now it's like, oh shit, like this might make its way onto my like Weird Al playlist of just, if I want to put on Weird Al, I throw on the playlist. Yeah. And this probably isn't on it right now, but it may make it onto the list now as something when I'm shuffling.
Totally.
That's so cool, man. I'm glad you guys are doing this. And I can't wait to see the final end product of the rankings.
Yeah,
that's going to be really
cool. It's going to be a while. Hopefully.
Yeah.
All right. You know what? I keep saying that, but then I'm like, oh my God, we're going to be into the 90s by the summertime.
Yeah.
And that, like, we're past the point where he does an album every year.
You're
like,
right.
Now it's going to be these giant gaps.
Yeah, big,
in
huge gaps.
Releases.
Yeah. So
maybe it'll be done in like 3 years.
Yeah.
Who knows? We might only get like 150 episodes
of
this show. But we keep finding ways to pad out time. We got those. He made a lot of TV appearances that we will continue to dig through. Someone pointed out that we skipped over, and we'll probably do this before we get to even worse. We skipped over when he was a guest on Remote Control on MTV. So I'm like, I don't know. I'll fucking watch the episode of Remote Control.
Let's do it.
Like whatever piece of, and listeners, you know, our Instagram page, that's the best way to contact us.
Yes.
If you're like, you miss this Big Al TV thing where he was, we don't need to review every single time he performed on a TV show. But if there was a half hour TV special that starred or featured Weird Al Yankovic and we missed it, you let us know and we will work it back into the show somehow.
Yeah.
But we're talking about rankings. Let's talk about these rankings.
Let's do it.
Where do you think Good Enough For Now is going on your list?
I'm actually going to put it higher than I thought I was going to. And it's funny because I referenced Slime Creatures and I'm going to put it underneath Slime Creatures.
Wow.
I'm going to put it
and
between
above, Don't Wear Those Shoes.
And above Don't Wear Those Shoes.
Nice.
I'm in the same ballpark, but a little bit lower. I'm going in between Mr. Frump and the Iron Lung and I'll Be Mellow When I'm Dead.
I think that I will say at this point in Polka Party, we still have to talk about Christmas at Ground Zero, which is a big one. But at this point, this is second only to Dog Eat Dog in terms of originals on this record. And possibly just songs in general. Like, this is great. Like, this is a really, again, it's not over the top. It's not super fancy or even like, as like, I feel like Doggy Dog is flashy in an impressive way, and this is subtle, but the subtlety of this and how well executed it is it's really, really, really good. They did an excellent job with this, and it's just such a, it's like a smile on my face the entire time I'm listening to this song.
For sure. I also just really, really like Don't Wear Those Shoes, which was a song I didn't pay attention to until Kelly came on and made us listen to it, really. But I'm like, man, that is a chorus that gets stuck in your head, too. Like, that's one that I still think about.
Yes. It's very catchy.
Sean, you're not alone. You get to do some rankings, too, here.
Oh, okay.
Every single guest, we have ranked their songs. And this is parodies and originals. You get to tell us where you're going to put Good Enough for Now. And then also, you can move one song wherever you want on the list.
I would probably put it.
Don't be afraid to put it at the top. Don't be afraid to put it anywhere.
I would say I would probably put it right after Yoda.
Now, here's the other thing you get to do.
Okay.
Yeah.
You can take any song on this list that you think that is way too high, that is way too low, and you can move it wherever you think is appropriate on the list.
Very cool. Yeah, I think, when you were reading through it, I kept saying, where's Living with a Hernia? And it is on the list. So I was glad to see that.
It's low, though, yeah.
Yeah, I would probably put that right above Like a Surgeon. I don't know why, but that song.
Wow.
I love it.
Living with a Hernia is now a top five song.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's probably an unusual pick for most.
The best part is where Living with a Hernia currently was on the list was where the person who picked it for the show played.
Yeah. Are you serious? That's hilarious.
It's so good. I love, again, it's my favorite thing. We said it is like this weird, like Weird Al meets White Elephant.
Yeah.
Just this like hostile takeover of these charts every time. It's so great.
Love it.
Well, before we wrap up, Sean, tell us a little bit about Cowboy Coder.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So, my debut album just came out back in October. And it's called
Coder. It's very, very good, everybody.
Oh,
please
thank
check
you very
it out.
Much.
Yes, love it.
Yeah, it was born out of a genesis of collaboration with MC Lars. He was so much fun to collaborate with on Blockchain Planet, and I kept working with him and started writing some songs with him and realized I could actually make a whole album out of it. So it was really kind of a really cool musical journey to like kind of embrace. I've always loved music, been engaged with it, but never had it in the forefront of my mind that I could actually be an artist and put something out there. So it was like, it was really cool to like go through that
Very
whole
cool.
process with him. He's a great mentor and yeah. And the album is basically, it's kind of, I like to think of it as a three act play. It's got like the first part of the album's all about like introductions and shared human experiences. Then we get into like the emotions of code rage itself, you know, how coders get frustrated and stuff. And then the end of it is kind of some philosophical concepts around time and how you create solutions in the world to make a better world and stuff. So it's kind of a really cool album. It's definitely something that's very near and dear to my heart, and I hope listeners will enjoy it and get some good entertainment out of it.
Well, guys, go check out Cowboy Coder, and we'll be back next week with the final episode of the Polka Party album, which we recorded live during a charity live stream for Big Brothers Big Sisters of Coastal and Northern New Jersey with our friend MC Frontalot. So some of you may have seen this one live already, but you know, you get to hear the audio version of it.
There you go. Thanks, Sean.
Yeah, thank you guys. Thanks for having me on. This has been great. I'm looking forward to the final end of the project and see where everything ends up.
Hello, everyone. We're Superhero Stuff You Should Know. And if you think you know about superheroes and comic books, think again.
We got romance. We got action.
Romance.
We got comedy. We got everything you need, man. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know for all your superhero needs.
I don't know about this romance. What part are you talking about?
We've got all kinds of sketches and then deep dives on top of that. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
All right, so come on down to... Wait, why did I say come on down? To Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
At Maximum Mediocrity, people say things like,
I don't dress like this on the regular basis. This isn't my, you know, pooping uniform. This is not
And they also say things like,
The nurses are usually either angels of mercy or whores.
Every episode is a new experience where you get to know people that aren't famous but should be.
Why am I facing Floyd Mayweather in the woods.
My co-host Morgan and I track down the people you didn't know you needed to hear from.
It's like hot sex in a mug.
We are the Maximum Mediocrity Podcast, and we are on all major podcasting platforms. We'll be waiting for you.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.